leaders all over the world should take action against these kind of acts. Because if you don't, if you remain silent, if you just take it, ignore such a thing, they will continue to do this kind of behaviors, and they think that the Muslims are getting more and more secular like them, which is not true. The Muslims of the world are I think my analysis is that they become more and more religious in every year we go forward.
Okay.
The Muslims of the world, they are becoming more and more serious about their religions, as our brother said.
Sure, and we're going to have to wrap it up, sir. Apologies to jump in there. That's all the time we have for tonight's show. Allow me to thank my guest, Mr. Mohsen Ali, human rights activist, joining us from Houston, Texas. And also thanks to researcher and activist, Mr. Hossein Shekhian, joining us from Rome. And a special thanks to you, Ar, for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with Ayah 35 to 37 of Surah Ali Imran, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dhurriyatan ba'dhuha min ba'din wallahu samiyun 'alim. إذ قالت امرأة عمران رب إني نذرت لك ما في بطني محررا فتقبل مني إنك أنت السميع العليم فلما وضعتها قالت رب إني وضعتها أنثى والله أعلم بما وضعت وليس الذكر كالأنثى وإني سميتها مريم وإني أعيذها بك وذريتها من الشيطان الرجيم فتقبلها ربها بقبول حسن وأنبتها نباتا حسنا وكفلها زكريا كلما دخل عليها زكريا المحراب وجد عندها رزقا قال يا مريم أنى لك هذا قالت هو من عند الله إن الله يرزق من يشاء بغير حساب.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. When the wife of Imran said, My Lord, dedicate to you what is in my belly in consecration. Accept it from me. Indeed, you are the All-Hearing, the All-Knowing. And when she bore her, she said, My Lord, I have borne a female child, and Allah knew better what she had borne. And the female is not like the male. I've named it Mary, and I commend her and her offspring to your care against evil of the outcast Satan. Thereupon her Lord accepted her with a gracious acceptance and made her grow up in a worthy fashion, and he charged Zechariah with her care. Whenever Zechariah visited her in the sanctuary, he would find provision with her. He said, O Mary, from where does this come for you? She said, It comes from Allah. Allah provides whomever He wishes without any reckoning.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
France intensifies its crackdown on nationwide protests over the police killing of a teenager, arresting hundreds more during the fifth night of demonstrations. Syria says its air defenses have confronted an Israeli missile strike in central parts of the country. And the UN chief calls for humanitarian aid and deployment of international security force in Haiti to help the country fight a surge in violence.
Welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.
Violent protests erupt for a fifth consecutive night across France over the fatal shooting of a teenager. The Interior Ministry said a total of 486 people have been arrested over the unrest just in the earlier hours of Sunday. Those who were arrested took part in protests in major cities of Paris, Marseille, and Lyon. Thousands of protesters had also been arrested during previous demonstrations, which were cracked down by the police. Protests continued in defiance of a ban announced on all large-scale events in the country. The unrest prompted President Emmanuel Macron to postpone his planned state visit to Germany. The nationwide rallies are in response to the death of Nahel, who was shot dead by police in the town of Nanterre on Tuesday. His funeral was held on Saturday amid a heavy security presence.
France is burning. Torched vehicles, buildings on fire, property damage, and looting. The level of anger and frustration can be heard in these screams. And it's over this. Just like that, a life was snuffed out. A brutal murder by French police over a traffic stop. And this is the victim, a teenager of Algerian and Moroccan descent, only 17 years old. Reactions from French officials, including the French president, though sympathetic, had a sense of disconnect from the general public. Meanwhile, the French Interior Ministry displayed a total disconnect, and that they did. Over 45,000 police officers deployed so far. Number of arrests, around 2,500. Number of injuries, hundreds of civilians, mainly by police officers, and over 200 police officers. And these are figures up to this day, Saturday, which are sure to rise if the protests continue. And as to how widespread these protests are, this is a map showing how many towns are now engulfed. The unrest has revived memories of 3 weeks of nationwide riots back in 2005 that forced then-President Jacques Chirac to declare a state of emergency following the death of two young men electrocuted in a power substation as they hid from police. Protests in France are not just about the murder of this young 17-year-old boy, as horrific as that was. A number of factors are tearing the French society apart. Cost of living crisis, police violence and discrimination, and neglect of poor neighborhoods are additional reasons behind the unrest. As shocking as the murder of this young teen is, it is representative of major shortcomings in the French society. One of them is racism and police brutality, as weighed in by the UN.
We also emphasize the importance of peaceful assembly. We call on the authorities to ensure use of force by police to address violent elements in demonstrations always respects the principles of legality, necessity, proportionality, non-discrimination, precaution, and accountability.
Additionally, the fatal shooting has fed into long-standing complaints of police violence from within the low-income, racially mixed suburbs and major cities in France. But French police have been guilty of excessive use of force over the cost of living crisis, especially during the days of the Yellow Vest protest movement. A brief history check reveals that in 1968, protests erupted in Nanterre, the epicenter of the current protests. Those protests, which began over student reform, led to a revolt against the state, which had morphed into a cost of living protest. 3 days before then-President Charles de Gaulle's address, the communists negotiated the Grenelle Accords, under whose terms workers would receive substantial wage increases and better working conditions. But the French government did not learn its lessons from those protests, which had almost led to a revolution. To this day, the poor and racially mixed urban communities of France are neglected by the government. After the 2005 riots, then-President Nicolas Sarkozy, elected in 2007, had promised a Marshall Plan to improve life there, but that did not translate into concrete results. Then the socialist ex-president François Hollande came to power promising an end to the ghettos. That ended up with the same fate. And the current president has also failed to improve the quality of life for these residents of not only French living in these areas, but for France as a whole. And these are some of the economic figures that France is facing. With all of these factors tearing into the French society, this French president has his handful when it comes to addressing these problems. But hopes can't be pinned on a president who tramples on democracy through fast-track legislation, like he did with the retirement age without a vote. Instead, there should be more attention given to the needs of the French, especially the ones living in underprivileged areas, before darker consequences of this alienation proves irreversible for the French president.
In the meantime, Iran has called on the French government and police to exercise restraint and to avoid violence amid recent protests over the killing of a 17-year-old teenager in the Paris suburbs. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said the French government should end the violence against its people by respecting the principles of human rights, the freedom of expression, and the right to hold peaceful rallies. He said the discriminatory policies of certain European countries, including France, against immigrants, and their refusal to correct the wrong behavior towards them, have caused unfavorable conditions for the minority group. Kanani called on the French authorities to pay attention to the demands of the demonstrators. He also advised Iranian citizens to avoid unnecessary trips to the country. The Albanian Prime Minister Edi Rama warns that the MEK terrorist group must leave his country unless it stops its anti-Iran operations. He says the group cannot use Albania to fight against the Iranian government. We discussed the issue in our news review program with our guest. Time now for the news review of this program. The Albanian Prime Minister warns that the MEK terrorist group must leave his country unless it stops its anti-Iran operations. In an interview with the German media, Prime Minister Edi Rama said the group cannot use Albania to fight against the Iranian government. He said that Tirana has no intention of being at war with Tehran, and it does not accept anyone who has abused its hospitality. Last month, the Albanian security forces searched the MEK camp several times. Their first operation was on June 20th, when they entered the camp upon an order issued by Albania's anti-terrorism court in a probe into the group's illegal activities. MEK members violently clashed with the police and blocked their way. The MEK is a notorious terrorist organization that has conducted numerous assassinations and bombings against Iranian officials and civilians since the 1979 Islamic Revolution. Mesel Khodabanda is a former MEK member who joins us from London. We also have Olsi Zekci, who's an historian and social activist who joins us from Tirana. All right, welcome to you both. Mesel Khodabanda, obviously too many questions to cover in this segment of the program, but welcome. And please tell us what is going on when it comes to what has happened to this terrorist cult organization and the way that the Albanian government is not treating it.
Thank you for having me. The Mujahideen came to Albania from Iraq with the understanding and a written guarantee, which was signed by Americans, by Iraqis, and the United Nations, and I was there, to come to Albania to dismantle, to be de-radicalized, and integrate in the society. It didn't happen, because when they came, the government in America changed, in the United States, and after that, instead of dismantling and de-radicalization, they gave them a camp, and they started doing what they were doing in Iraq, which is meddling in the host country. Now, by the information that has come out with the seizure of their computer, it is obvious that they are working against the best interest of Albania as well as European Union. Albania has got every right to contain them and stop them from illegal activities.
Why did it take them this long to actually react and now involve the police against them?
Albania is not an independent and a free country. And being an American colony, even in what is happening nowadays, the order has come from Washington. During the era of the Trump administration, it was the Americans who allowed the Mujahideens to misuse Albania and to launch a number of terrorist attacks against Iran.
Obvious question would be, why has the U.S. decided to, at this point, if you agree with them, to place such an order?
It's because they are working against the American interest as well. At this point of time, Mujahideen are working with the neocons against the democratically elected government of America. They are pushing the agenda intelligence for the part of Trump. And this evidence that...
For the part of Trump?
Yes.
So the MKO is working on Albanian soil against the U.S. for Trump, in particular against the Democrats.
In particular against the Democrats. The situation is that they are using... It's not only them, there's others as well, but they are part of a cabal that are using against the Democrats. That's not something that the Americans can tolerate.
All right, very fascinating. Thank you. Thank you for the information. Mesel Khodabanda, former MEK member from London, and Olsi Zekci, thank you so much, historian and social activist from Tirana. Thank you to you both. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in. Syria says its air defenses intercepted an Israeli missile strike across central parts of the country, adding that it downed most of the missiles. An army statement said the missiles flew over parts of Lebanon's capital, Beirut, and hit locations in the vicinity of the city of Homs. It added that there were no casualties, only material damage. An Israeli military spokesperson claimed that earlier an anti-aircraft missile was launched from inside Syrian territory towards Israel, which exploded in midair. The Tel Aviv regime frequently launches missile attacks on Syria, mainly targeting its military and resistance fighters battling foreign-backed terrorists. Syria has time and again denounced Israeli acts of aggression, saying the attacks are a violation of its sovereignty. Damascus says it reserves the right to respond to the Israeli aggression. Tens of thousands of Israelis took to the streets of Tel Aviv for the 26th consecutive week, persisting with their protests against the Israeli cabinet's extremist policies, including the controversial judicial overhaul plan. Protesters blocked traffic and chanted slogans against the prime minister, calling him a dictator. They held pictures of Benjamin Netanyahu, which read persona non grata. The protesters vowed to continue with their mass demos despite Netanyahu announcing that he is dropping one of the most controversial parts of his judicial overhaul plans. In an interview with a U.S. news outlet, he said that he was no longer seeking to give Parliament the authority to overturn Supreme Court rulings. However, Netanyahu added that he was still pursuing changes to the way judges are selected. The opposition says that the new bill would still open the door to corruption. The proposed judicial overhaul has also stirred Western concern and spooked investors. The UN chief has called for international assistance for Haiti against its criminal gangs. Antonio Guterres, who is visiting Haiti, is calling on the UN Security Council to authorize immediate deployment of what he called a robust international security force in the country. Guterres says the tragedy of the Haitian people must be made the top priority of the international community. He says people of the Central American country are facing a cascade of crises and unbearable living conditions. Back in October, Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry called for the UN help to prop up the country's overwhelmed national police force. According to UN assessments, Haiti is reeling from gang shootings, kidnappings, and rapes, with gangs also controlling access to water, food, and health care in the capital, Port-au-Prince. Former U.S. President Donald Trump has slammed President Joe Biden, calling him a criminal and a liar.
Joe Biden is corrupt, and Joe Biden is a very compromised president. He's being paid off just like a common criminal gets paid off, just a more sophisticated manner and much larger numbers. But he's totally protected by the Department of Injustice and by the fake news media, which has been weaponized to a degree we have never, ever seen before. This is a crime 100 times bigger than Watergate, and they just don't want to write about it. He's in a certain
state. Trump made the remarks at a campaign rally for the presidential election in 2024 in Pickens, South Carolina. He said that Biden was incompetent and corrupt, adding that the Biden administration could get the U.S. into a third world war. Trump said that he would appoint a special prosecutor committed solely to the prosecution of Biden and his family over money laundering claims. National polls have consistently showed Trump to be the frontrunner in the Republican primary race by wide margin. This is while Trump himself faces a host of legal battles as well. Our correspondent Colin Campbell joined us earlier and talked about how there is a growing division in Washington.
When it comes to Ukraine, this deals with Burisma, a company that had workings in Ukraine. And what Trump is alleging and some Republicans are alleging is that through his son, through the current president's son, Hunter Biden, he received some kickbacks. So when the former president is talking about the Biden family, he's really talking about the current president's son, Hunter, and the president himself, not so much as the president's wife, Jill Biden, and of course, his other son, Beau Biden, has passed away. So, you know, it's just really these two. And when it comes to China,
there
isn't a whole lot of evidence either when it comes to that. They're looking for more evidence on that. They haven't really presented a concrete case. But of course, Trump himself has also been alleged for taking, working out sweet deals with China on behalf of his daughter, Melania, his daughter, Ivanka Trump. So, you know, he's pointing fingers. People are pointing fingers at Trump. Trump is pointing fingers back at the Bidens and other Democrats. It's really just a demonstration of the division in Washington and how it only is growing instead of finding any kind of unity that would work for the American people.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
On Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary. O possessor of pardon and good pleasure, from wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but Thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely Thou art the All-Forgiving, the All-Compassionate.
Limelight. Tropical forest loss generated 2.7 gigatons of carbon pollution in 2022. That's one figure from a new report finding tropical deforestation increased in 2022 despite global pledges. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Common Dreams reported, despite world leaders' pledge to halt and reverse global deforestation by 2030, the tropics lost 10% more primary forest in 2022 than in 2021. That's the latest update from the World Resources Institute's WRI, Global Forest Watch, released recently, which found that tropical forests had lost 4.1 million hectares, generating as much carbon dioxide as India emits from fossil fuels in a year at 2.7 gigatons. One thing is clear, what happens in the forest doesn't stay in the forest. Francis Seymour, a distinguished senior fellow in WRI's forest program, said, as Mongabe reported. Seymour added that the data gathered by the University of Maryland was particularly disheartening because of its timing. At the COP26 UN Climate Conference in Glasgow in 2021, 145 nations signed the Glasgow Leaders' Declaration on Forest and Land Use. That included a promise to work collectively to halt and reverse forest loss and land degradation by 2030 while delivering sustainable development and promoting an inclusive rural transformation. Seymour said, "We had hoped by now to see signals in the data that we were turning the corner on forest loss. We doesn't see that signal yet, and in fact, we are heading in the wrong direction. The analysis focuses on tropical forest because more than 96% of human-caused deforestation takes place there, and because primary tropical rainforests are especially important for protecting biodiversity and regulating both the global climate and local temperature and weather patterns. Temperatures near newly deforested areas can increase by twice the amount forced upward by the climate crisis alone." The update found that the world lost an area of these essential forests the size of Switzerland at a rate of 11 soccer fields per minute. That's over 1 million hectares more than it should have to meet the global goal of halting deforestation by 2030. The WRI's Rod Taylor said, as British Broadcasting reported. Taylor said, "Globally, we are far off track and trending in the wrong direction. This could have serious consequences for both forest communities and efforts to limit global heating to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. Already, the world would be around 5/10 degrees Celsius warmer without forest. Since the turn of the century, we have seen a hemorrhaging of some of the world's most important forest ecosystems, despite years of efforts to turn that trend around," Global Forest Watch director Mikala Wey said at a press conference briefing reported by AFP, adding, "We are rapidly losing one of our most effective tools for combating climate change, protecting biodiversity, and supporting the health and livelihoods of millions of people." The website of VEON, meanwhile, reported, new research has highlighted damning figures as it revealed that an area equivalent to the size of Switzerland was cleared from Earth's rainforest in 2022. The report comes after a number of pledges globally to take definitive steps to end deforestation by 2030. The report by the World Resources Institute's WRI Global Forest Watch said that a massive chunk of the tropical forest disappeared as forest destruction rose by 10% compared to the previous year. The report also stated that the rate of loss was equivalent to losing 11 soccer fields of forest per minute as swathes of tropical forests were cleared for farming, mining, and other commercial activities. The report mentioned that tropical primary forest loss in 2022 totaled 4.1 million hectares. It further added that all this forest loss produced 2.7 gigatons of carbon dioxide emissions, which is equivalent to India's annual fossil fuel emissions. The report mentioned that non-fire-related losses reached the highest level since 2005. Such instances in the Brazilian Amazon are most often due to clear-cut deforestation. During the last year of Brazil President Jair Bolsonaro's administration, a high rate of primary forest loss occurred, which was an important agenda for President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva during the election. After winning the election, he even laid out a plan to end illegal deforestation in the Amazon, which was a major campaign pledge that is a critical step in addressing the country's significant carbon emissions from the region. Just a few days after the election result, Lula and his environment minister, Marina Silva, unveiled the action plan for the prevention and control of deforestation in the Amazon.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent, a weekly show that aims to address the most significant issues in the South Asian region. In today's program, we will be discussing American ambitions damaging Pakistan and Bollywood being used to spread Islamophobia. So stay tuned.
In this episode of The Subcontinent, we will discuss Pakistan's relations with the United States of America, and we shall take a look at Islamophobia in Bollywood.
Is Pakistan trying to maintain a golden mean in its relations with China and America? There's an agreement in Pakistan on the importance of strategic relations with Beijing. But at the same time, many doubts have been raised on the nature of Islamabad's relations with Washington.
The decades-old relation between Pakistan and the United States has not been enduring. Instead, the ties have witnessed periods of antipathy and estrangement. In a recent interview with a US-based media outlet, the Foreign Minister of Pakistan, Hina Rabbani Kar, said that Islamabad wants to have good relations with both Beijing and Washington and cannot choose between the two. However, periods of close ties between the two countries have been governed by America's requirement for Pakistan's cooperation to serve its strategic interests. On the other hand, Islamabad also needed economic and diplomatic help. Nevertheless, this symbiotic relation left both sides discontented. The relationship has done more bad than good to Pakistan, as a South Asian Muslim country does not share any long-term goals with America. It has also played a significant role in hindering Islamabad's relations with other countries. U.S. ties with Pakistan have obstructed democracy in the country, strengthening the army, in turn damaging the liberal and autonomous institution of Islamabad. It's important to note that the periods of close relations between the two countries were governed by military dictators in Pakistan. Support of military dictatorship by the White House and its imperialistic policies in the world has made the people of Pakistan wary and dissatisfied with the US.
During the Soviet-Afghan War and after the September 11 attacks, Pakistan did not have the flexibility to decide what role it wants to play in the United States' strategic ambitions. Islamabad was forced to act on the dictates of Washington as Pakistan's compliance determined the economic support it would receive from America.
According to strategic relations experts, the reason for successive U.S. governments to have praised Pakistan was to manipulate the South Asian country to fulfill strategic interests. America's long-term strategic and economic ambitions never aligned with Islamabad, therefore the needs were met through transactional relations. The mere fulfillment of the US designs that brought the two countries together has been followed by reprimanding Pakistan. In the 65-year period of ties between the two countries, Islamabad has been put under sanctions for 25 years, though the sanctions are not as severe as on Iran. Commenting on the alliance between the two countries, some foreign experts have been saying that Pakistan holds no permanent value for the United States and its relation with Islamabad depends on Washington's ambitions in the South Asian region. The weaponization of the economic power by the US has destroyed weak countries like Pakistan. Islamabad is still battling with the deluge of America's war on terror in Afghanistan that led to the emergence of Takfiri groups that have affected the economy and security of the country considerably. Meanwhile, the failure of America's 20-year Afghan war speaks volumes about its problematic military and foreign policies.
Now to have more insight, we are joined by Assistant Professor of International Relations, Federal Urdu University, Dr. Faisal Javed from Karachi. Welcome to the program, sir. It is believed that more than half a century of relations between the US and Pakistan has done more harm than good to the South Asian Muslim country. What is your opinion on this, sir?
Thank you. It's good questions. And I teach my students in my class and discuss with my colleagues and friends. In international relations, Lord Palmerston said that there are no permanent friends and there are no permanent enemies, only permanent interests. So Pakistan and U.S. relations have faced several challenges in their relationship. Both countries are celebrating 75th anniversary of its relationship. The strength in Pakistan-U.S. relations can be attributed to a combination of divergent strategic interests, trust issues, regional dynamics, external factors. So it's not one factor, it's several factors are playing the role. So Pakistan, in the historically, after the independence, Pakistan decided to make the partner and make the partnership with USA against the Soviet Union. Pakistan decided to make a part with CETO and CENTO, the defense pact, against the Soviet and communism expansion. So Pakistan, in the history, all the time, more than seven decades, Pakistan unconditionally supported the United States of America. But in the history, when Pakistan needed U.S. in 65 war, in 71 war, and other times, United States didn't come to support Pakistan in all the time. And right now, after Modi's visit to United States of America, they both countries, and especially United States of America, where Pakistan in the history unconditionally supported in all the events for United States of America, for its interest in against Soviet Union, in the against China, and even South Asia, and even the Middle East. So after seven decades, we saw their relations are in the very low positions. And recently, Modi's visited United States of America. This released a joint statement and again, United States pushed Pakistan, don't use your land against the India and stop the cross-border terrorism and other factors.
Coming to the second question, periods of military dictatorship in Pakistan led to closer ties with the U.S. Has Washington played a role in the weakening of democracy in Pakistan?
Again, it's a very, very good question. No doubt, Pakistan and U.S. relations, U.S. much focused and much better relation during military era. If we look in the history, in period when General Ayub Khan took over the government and imposed the martial law, before Skandar Mirza imposed the martial law, and he self became the president of Pakistan, United States and Pakistan had that time a good relations. And that time, United States used General Yahya Khan, General Ayub Khan against Soviet Union. So, and General Ziaulhaq, when he became the president and he became the head of Institute of head of Pakistan, so again, he needed Pakistan against Soviet. When Soviet entered in Afghanistan, again, this kind of military rule was supported and was helpful for United States of America to fulfill their interest in this region. And after 9/11, again, General Musharraf was the president. Again, United States needed a military ruler in Pakistan. And again, they used in Afghanistan and to support and strengthen military leadership. And if we look in the history, America gave more aid, comparatively civilian eras, more aid to military rulers. And it's much focused on military rulers. So we can say America is responsible directly and indirectly to weaken the democracy in Pakistan. And under the military rule, Pakistan aligned its foreign policy with U.S. interests, particularly in counter-terrorism and other regional security issues. The alignment resulted in increased military and financial assistance from the U.S., further strengthening the bilateral ties.
Now, moving on to the next question. Islamabad was an ally of Washington in the so-called war on terror. How did this alliance damage Pakistan?
Oh, your question is a great question. No doubt, the war on terror has had a profound impact on Pakistan. It has damaged the country's economically, socially, and politically. It has also damaged Pakistan's international reputation. The country has paid a heavy price for its alliance with Washington. The war against terrorism has significantly impacted Pakistan economically, and its estimated cost around $126 billion we lost in the term of revenue, damage to infrastructure, and increased security spending. The country's economy has also been hurt by the loss of tourism and investment. The war has led to increased radicalization and violence in Pakistan. There have have been numerous terrorist attacks on civilians and military installations. Roughly it's around more than 60,000 people were killed. Right now we are paying this kind of loss. Right now we are facing this kind of terrorism. It's impacts we are facing. This has created a climate of fear and insecurity in the country. Pakistan's reputation has been damaged by the war. The country has been accused of harboring terrorists and of not doing enough to combat extremism.
Now, moving on to a very important question. In the changing world order, Pakistan will have to choose between the U.S. and China. Sir, will Islamabad maintain close ties with Beijing, knowing that Pakistan holds no permanent value for America?
Yes, it is true that the current changing world order is likely to put pressure on Pakistan to choose between the U.S. and China. The U.S. is no longer the sole superpower in the world, and China is rising rapidly. This has led to a shift in the balance of power in the region, and Pakistan is caught in the middle. Pakistan has traditionally been close to the U.S., but the relationship has been strained recent years, especially after U.S. withdrawal and during when they decided U.S. withdrawal. The U.S. has been critical for Pakistan's support for terrorist groups, and it has also suspended, sometimes reduced, aid to Pakistan on several occasions. This has led to some Pakistani, U.S. Commitment. They have raised some questions about commitment with the Pakistan relationship. On the other hand, if we look on China, China, on the other hand, has been a reliable partner for Pakistan. China has provided Pakistan with billions of dollars in loan investment when Pakistan needed. Earlier, I replied to your questions. Pakistan lost around $126 billion in war against terrorism. So this gap filled by China. China announced CPAC and announced $64 billion in different sectors, in infrastructure, in energy, and other sectors. This thing is helpful for Pakistan to strengthen its economy, its infrastructure, and other things. And it has also helpful for Pakistan with the nuclear program. This has led to growing relationship between two countries, and history proved that China is time-tested and reliable partner than the U.S. It is, we cannot say in the future, it is possible that the country will try to maintain close ties with both the U.S. and China. However, it is possible that Pakistan will have to choose between the two countries. If Pakistan does choose China, it will be the sign that the country is no longer willing to be pawn in the U.S.-China rivalry. U.S.-China is a major economic partner for Pakistan. The country is likely to want to maintain close ties with China in order to secure access to China market and investment.
On that note, I would like to thank Assistant Professor of International Relations, Federal Urdu University, Dr. Faisal Javed from Karachi. Thanks for being on the program, sir. Now let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Yasser Khan, a netizen, tweeted, America has welcomed Riek Musharraf, an army dictator in the past, just as they have welcomed almost every dictator from Pakistan. So what are we crying for? It is about personal interests right now. America sees its interest in healthy relations with India. So why are we Pakistanis crying? Nagabhat from India tweeted, regular school shootings, transgender grooming, opioids crisis, support to jihadi groups in Libya, Syria, and Pakistan, support to drug lords in South America, bombing of ancient sites in Vietnam really befits Uncle Sam. Uncle Sam needs to know that it will get as much as it gives. Ali Imran, whose bio says a patriot from Lahore, tweeted, my Pakistan is burning under this current imported fascist and corrupt regime, which is imposed by Pakistani corrupt establishment with the help of Uncle Sam and company. People are suffering from the high inflation, corruption and fascism.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent here on IRIB English Radio.
Cinema holds the ability to inspire, entertain, and challenge societal norms. Fortunately, a disturbing trend that has infiltrated the Indian film industry in recent years is Islamophobia. Bollywood, as a means of soft power, has become a ground for hateful and anti-Muslim narratives, painting a distorted image of Islam and Muslims.
The Indian film industry, once celebrated for fostering communal harmony and promoting Hindu-Muslim unity, is now complicit in producing films that spread hatred and stereotypes against the Muslims of India. Movies such as Kashmir File and the recently released The Kerala Story have normalized the vilification of Muslims, portraying them as violent and oppressive. The Kerala Story, premised on the Hindutva conspiracy theory of love jihad, portrays Muslims as radicalized individuals. The movie falsely claimed conversion of thousands of Hindu women from Kerala to Islam, followed by getting recruited in the terrorist group ISIS. Kashmir Files, that was released in 2022, presents a distorted view of Kashmiri Muslims. Instead of highlighting the struggles of both Muslims and Hindus during the 1990s, when the valley was gripped by violence, the film unjustly portrays Muslims as the culprits, ignoring their efforts to protect the Hindu minority. Bollywood, being used as a soft power with its immense popularity, enabled these narratives to reach millions, influencing public opinion and perpetuating stereotypes. Regrettably, media literacy remains low amongst the masses, making them susceptible to misinformation and false narratives propagated through Bollywood. These films, with their anti-Islam and anti-Muslim language, propagate the notion that Islam is a savage, oppressive, and violent religion, weaving webs of prejudice and division that threaten the very fabric of the multicultural Indian society.
Bollywood's influence in shaping India's national identity and the global community's opinion of India cannot be overstated. However, in recent times, it has become a tool in the hands of organizations covertly designed to create a Hindu-dominated society where Muslims are relegated to the status of second-class citizens.
Over the past decade, Bollywood has become a powerful propaganda machine, spreading misinformation and reinforcing false narratives through movies. These movies are not isolated incidents. They represent a broader trend within Bollywood, where Islamophobic content has become a profitable venture. Financial interests often drive the production of such films, exploiting hate as the currency of choice in today's entertainment industry. An alarming trend is that these films are often exempted from taxes in the states under the ruling BJP party. Generating substantial revenue, it highlights the popularity of hate-centric narratives. The financial interests of the filmmakers seem to align with the propagation of divisive politics, exploiting Islamophobia for monetary and political gains. According to media experts, one of the objectives of the production of such films is to divert people's attention from real issues such as rampant unemployment and economic hardships. Studies have shown that local media play a significant role in promoting these films and changing the country's political discourse. Giving time coverage to the recently released Islamophobic films helps the ruling political parties that work in alliance with the media divert the attention from significant issues affecting the lives of the masses. Promoting a distorted version of history, these movies assist in manipulating the common people, fulfilling particular political agendas.
Now, to have more insight on this, we are joined by lawyer and researcher, member of Article 21 Trust Think Tank, Asif Ali Zaidi from New Delhi. Welcome to the program, sir. Let's talk about Bollywood. In what way has Bollywood's portrayal of Islam and the Muslim community evolved over the years? What factors have contributed to the recent surge in Islamophobic narratives?
So thank you so much for having me for this discussion. So if we look back at the history of, you know, Bollywood and Islamic and Muslim portrayals, we have seen, like, post-partitions, we have movies like Mughal-e-Azam and Amar Akbar and Dhoni and, you know, Barsaat. which echoed the, you know, sense of communal harmony and also the secularism. But again, in such movies, we have, you know, the portrayal of Muslims, you know, were very, like, it was very stereotypical in nature. Like, we, when we see movies like, you know, Amar Akbar and Thoni, Akbar has been shown as a darzi wearing, you know, cap, having a taweez in, you know, in his neck, and his eyes are cold. So this is how, like, Muslims have been portrayed. But yes, they were not communal in nature. But then we have seen movies like post-partition, like post-Babri Masjid demolition. We have movies like Bombay and Mrs. and Mr. Iyer, which showed the complex relation between Hindus and Muslims. Post 9/11, we have seen the global surge in Islamophobia, and Bollywood was, like, was not immune from that. Though there were, like, you know, attempts in terms of the movies like My Name Is Khan, where they have the, you know, portrayal of Muslim, and they try to, you know, sympathize with Muslim characters, but still, you know, there has been a continuous surge. And then post 2014, we have movies like Kashmir Files, we have Kerala Story, Panipat, we have Padmavat, which are very Islamophobic in nature. So basically, these movies had, you know, these instances, the hardened instances, had metastasized the Islamophobia. So what the factors which I really feel could possible to, like, you know, to galvanize this Islamophobia would be like socio-political environment of the country, because most of the time we have seen India is marred by communal tension in between Hindus and Muslims. So this could be one of the, like, you know, reasons for that. And again, there, and the another factor could be the, you know, the deep-seated, you know, biases and prejudice within the communities. So this is again is one of the factors on which the Islamophobic movies are made. And, you know, third factor could be the political alignment of the filmmakers.
Moving on to the second question. In a heterogeneous society like India, what can be the reason for the production and promotion of Islamophobic films in Bollywood? Do they intersect with political agendas?
Yes, there are, you know, a couple of factors that basically, you know, lead to the Islamophobic content that is being, you know, made by the Bollywood. And yes, there exists, you know, an intersection with the political ideology as well. So, for example, if we look, you know, one of the important factors, that is the political instrumentalization of the movies through the art and media. Because as I have, you know, said in the previous question as well, so of the time in the movies, we have seen, like, the directors and the producers of the particular movie have their aligned, you know, they have aligned to a particular ideology. For example, in the movie Kashmir Files, we have very, like, clearly noted that there has been a misinformation, there has been a, you know, clear distortion of fact and histories, and the movies were, you know, promoted by those in powers. So, for example, Prime Minister Narendra Modi himself has said that, you know, Kashmir Files is basically, you know, uncovers the truth.
Mr. Zaidi, as we have seen, some of these Islamophobic films get endorsed by influential figures. The publicity contributes films' popularity and financial gains. In addition to that, what impact does it have on a diverse society like India?
Yes. So as I have said earlier, when the Kashmir Files was released, the Prime Minister of the country himself endorsed it, despite knowing the fact that the film lacked the credentials, the film lacked the historical, you know, truth. That is the second, first thing. Mm-hmm. The second, the very recent film, that is the Kerala Story, which was released again by the Bollywood, which is very Islamophobic in nature, because it claimed that 32,000, you know, girl converted to Islam and joined ISIS. But when the matter approached to the Supreme Court of India, they conceded the very fact that not the 32,000, but just three women were converted to Islam. They had traveled to, you know, Middle East to join their husbands with the ISIS. So that is very important. But again, just like Kashmir Files, the Kerala Story was also endorsed by those who are in the power.
There you have it, lawyer and researcher, member of Article 21 Trust Think Tank, Asif Ali Zaidi from New Delhi. Thank you for being on the program, sir. Let's look at how the social media has covered it.
Nabil, a physician from Saudi Arabia, tweeted, Indian Hindutva parties are on the path of blaming Islamophobia. Not only the film industry, but different IT firms and NGOs are working on the agenda of Hindu promoting. media should play a role in exposing this Hindutva propaganda. Jenny Taylor, an author, writer, and human rights activist, tweeted, "Hate and Islamophobia have been mainstreamed in India, thanks to Bollywood, which has now found a new audience for its hate-filled movies. Under the garb of freedom of speech, Muslims are being typecast to the extent that its fallout is fierce and immediate." Noor, a netizen, tweeted, "It will either ban or it will flop. Currently, only dehumanization of Muslims is selling in Bollywood. So everyone's busy selling Islamophobia."
And that was our episode on Pakistan-US relations and Islamophobia, a new norm in the Indian cinema. See you next week.
In the limelight.
15 million Americans are expected to lose Medicaid coverage, and nearly 7 million others may lose it solely due to logistical problems. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more.